complex body and vivid shapes.
Yes, thank you. This is indeed the talk of my, the title of my talk, Sylvester's question, convex bodies and limit shape, and also this is the layout of my talk. I'm going to talk about convex bodies first, then limit shape, then Sylvester's question, and then limit shape again. About convex, I say very little. So convex bodies will be basically now in two-dimensional space, and I denote them by they're said by script C, and I will also consider this lattice Z. This is a dense lattice in the plane, something like this dense lattice here, and I consider, as you see down there, the set of P sub n of k is a set of all convex lattice polygons contained in the set k itself, where the lattice is meant 1 over n times z2. This is the fine lattice, and here is my convex body k, and I consider all lattice polygons inside. And a result of Arnold from 1980 prompted Verschig to ask, is there a typical element in it? Is that clearly formulated? Question. Coherence in this structure in P and K. And so this is, the answer is yes. And this is on the next transparency, and it starts this way. I have with, so there is first, there is a limiting shape, and I start this way. There is a map from C to C, the set of convex bodies to the set of convex bodies, which carries every convex body K to a subset, another convex body contained in K, called K note. I'll be going to define later. And with that half definition, here is a statement. For every positive epsilon and every k in every convex, the relative proportion of those convex lattice polygons that are epsilon distance away from k note represent very little. Pn of k are very close to k. Delta is the usual Hausdorff distance, which is written over here. Delta is the usual Hausdorff distance. In order to do something about in order to prove that theorem over there, you have to understand the denominator, how big the denominator is. So how many convex together in this collection P of nk? And here is the answer. P of nk is this quantity, 3 times cubic root of that thing over there, zeta 3 divided by zeta 2, if you can't read it because of my handwriting. And there is a mysterious number AP of k naught, which I'm going to explain later. And then n to the 2/3 is the dependence in the exponent on n, the parameter in the lattice. And actually it is, in fact it is one, the exponent is 1/3, because you better measure it with the number of lattice points is n squared. Actually I assume that that's fine. Nothing assumed. So this result that this is sort of limit shape result, I could have formulated as well. Say you take the elements of P sub n k and take their average. So this is a function between 0 and 1. And what you see over there says that this function, which is between 0 and 1, is either 0 or 1, except on the tends to 0 or 1, except on the boundary of k-naught. And this notation gives rise to other questions in the same field. If you consider lying and convex lattice polygons, say not convex body, but in so one ingredient for the second theorem will come in how this happened. This was first t square, in which case k naught is this green thing. This is parabola arcs connecting midpoints of the square, of the edges of the square. First proved by Vershik and myself, soon after by Sinai, different method, probabilistic method, and his method gave more than what of if you, for instance, this is it, if you want, so this is for the square, say, you want to know, so this is the limiting shape, and you want to know how many of the of your convex lattice polygons go above this line. Point and line are very close to the limiting shape. Then, and you want to know how many of them contain this point. Then, as a parameter of this, the coordinates of this point and this line and point, you have a central limit theorem, depending on. And this was later extended by Vershik and Zaituni to other collections of lattice polygons, contained or not contained or limited in some way. The main tool in the proof of the second theorem and the first as well is this quantity HMN, especially for the square case. HMN is the number of convex lattice curves connecting 0, 0 to MN within this rectangle. And so this is what I want to compute, I want to explain at least. And here is the statement. The logarithm of the number of such curves is this quantity here. Cubic root of M times N is over there. This is the order of magnitude, and there is a constant, an important constant. And this is valid as long as m over n squared and n over m squared tend to zero. So this is a... You can... So there is a generating function you can write up for that. And then saddle point methods make it possible to compute what you see over there. There is a little difficulty because the generative function does not have positive coefficients all the way long. And actually, that's why zeta and zeta appear over there. And also, there is another, that logarithm of h and of h is always less than 15 times cubic root of mn. This is always true. So that precise estimate is valid for m over n squared and n over m squared tending to zero. But this is an estimate which is larger than the previous one, but this is always true. And as it happens, the first estimate is not quite true for every value, every pair of m and n. And here is the... So if m equals epsilon times n squared along that curve, if you compute this, the coefficient is going to be 3 times cubic root of the same thing plus epsilon to the 1 over 6 plus minus 1 over epsilon to the 1 over 6. So there is a small fluctuation over there because the distribution of the what I'm saying here as m equals has m equals epsilon times n squared, so when it does not go to zero, there is a very small but positive epsilon, and you compute the h of m n, coefficient is not going to be, so cubic root of m n appears as well, but cubic root of 3 times cubic root of this is not valid anymore. There is an additional term, epsilon to the 1 over 6, with plus or minus sign. So this is not a true estimate for every value. This is the main difficulty in the proof. But occurs only when your squares are very flat, and you can handle them using this other estimate. But the basic message is the following here. For a non-degenerate parallelogram, you can't see anything at the moment. For a non-degenerate parallelogram, I talked about rectangles yet, but this works for non-degenerate parallelograms as well. Just the first and the last point should belong to the lattice. The number of convex lattice curves connecting that point to the other point is, the logarithm is 3 times zeta times cubic root of the area of the parallelogram. So once you have this, the computer comes almost. So you check, you go from 0, 0 to nn, say, and you check how many of these curves point with the tangent as I made the drawing, right? And so certainly only a fraction of the convex curves pass through that point with that tangent. So cubic root of t1 times n to the 2/3 plus cubic root of t2 times n to the 2/3 is less than cubic root of t times n to the 2/3. And you get an inequality, a geometric inequality from the previous results. Namely, that the cubic root of the first parallelogram plus the cubic root of the second parallelogram is smaller than the cubic root of the square or the area of the square. And you also see that equality would happen when equality happens, most curves I can choose this line and this point here anywhere I like, but most of the curves will go where the sum of the two cubes equals the third cube, cubic root.
Is there an M in that formula?
Pardon me?
Is there an M in that
formula? Say this is an N and M, but I just wrote N because this is a fixed point somewhere. So it's proportional to n, all sides of my parallelograms, for the sake of this example. So you're looking for the case where t1 cube, cubic root of t1 plus cubic root of t2 equals cubic root of t. So this is where equality can occur. We'll talk about a matter. Turn. So here is a convex curve S right there, and pick points on the boundary x1, x2, etc., and then you take a tangent at xi and xi plus 1 to the convex curve, and they form a triangle, the tangent and the connecting segment between xi and xi plus 1, and I call this triangle T sub I, and I denote it by the same its area by the same letter. And the affine perimeter is defined as AP of S is defined as the limit of twice the sum of the cubic roots of the areas of these triangles. And as the point, as the set of points gets refined, and as it turns out, this limit exists. And it coincides with the infimum, And the only thing you have to prove for that is that if you subdivide the triangle further, this particular triangle further, with this point and this line, so you get two more triangles over here, then the cubic root of this one plus the cubic root of this one is smaller than the cubic root of the original one, which I just explained in another form, not geometric form, but you prove it geometrically here. An example would be that of the circle, for which the affine perimeter turns out to be 2 pi. If you do that computation, it explains to you that the exponent 1 over 3 cannot be replaced by anything else. If you take a larger number, you get infinity. If you get a smaller number, you get 0 for the circle. And it is 0 for polygons, because almost all of the triangles have 0 area. Properties of this mapping are here. This is upper semi-continuous concave with respect to Minkowski addition. It is affinely equivariant in this sense, that if L is a linear mapping, then the affine perimeter of S times the cubic root of the determinant, absolute value, which is missing from over there. And here are two representations of APS as integrals when the boundary is smooth. Here is one more property that I will need. And kappa is the curvature, yes, kappa is the curvature, and r is the radius of curvature at the point on the boundary where the outward normal points in direction phi. And integrated according to arc lengths. Here is another statement. Among all convex curves connecting A to B within the triangle T, the arc of the touching parabola has the largest affine perimeter. Touching parabola meaning that the parabola touches the sides of T at A and B, relatively. And this shows you that the equality holds, actually, in that case, when this is a parabola, and the tangent is, and the line is a tangent. And here is the definition of that unique K note I started with. Star of K is the supremum of all affine perimeters in the class CK, in the class of all convex sets contained in K, and it turns out to be a maximum because of upper semi-continuity, and there is a theorem saying that this maximum is reached on a unique K note. This is that particular map I started with, and for the square, it is the thing I told you. It's a somewhat mysterious map, because if you cut off a piece of the square, then it remains the same thing, unless you cut deep enough so that to reach the parabola arcs. I want to say some properties of this K note. A few properties, and then a little application. So the no line segment is contained on the boundary. All three arcs are parabola arcs, and this mapping, which takes K to K note, is affinely equivariant. So if you use a non-singular affinity, it produces the same. There are many more properties that, but I'd rather explain something how this quantity is used. So if you take a smooth convex body in this time d-dimensional space, and then affine perimeter is called affine surface area, and you compute it by integrating the d plus first root of the product curvature on the boundary, so everything is defined more or less, p Pn is the best approximating polytope on n vertices to your given S. Say there is a fact that this is the order of approximation. So this is n to the minus 2 over d minus 1 times the volume of the symmetric difference is going to tend to a constant, which depends only on dimension and the convex body itself. And the constant is a finely invariant. So this is how the affine perimeter comes into almost all approximation questions of this type, because the best approximation is affine equivariant, so it has to depend on something that is affine equivariant. Moreover, the vertices of Pn are uniformly distributed near the boundary of S, if S is smooth. And there is some indication how that form. It's a vague statement here, and I can't be more precise at the moment. So, you can ask the same question about limiting shape as you see here. Same question as before, but instead of the lattice, look at a random sample of points. Xn is a uniform random sample of random points. Define Q of Xn as the set of all convex polygons with vertices coming from your random sample. Right? Is it this collection of random convex polygons, this time not lattice polytope, the random polygons, have a limiting shape, have some typical element? And here is the answer, yes. For every epsilon and every k, the same limiting relation holds. And the limit is the same thing. So, I came to this question when I was talking about the previous result in Berkeley a couple of years ago, and Rick Vitale asked me if it would work for random points. And I always thought so, and I also had the conviction that lattice points and random points as related to convex bodies behave very similarly. And this theorem this is the limiting shape theorem samples. In order to determine what you see over there, I have to understand what the expected size of the random collection is. The expected size of the random collection is written here. N choose k times the probability that vertex of the convex hull. None of them is contained in the convex hull. So the definition p and k is the probability that x random sample lands in convex position. If I can do that, I will be able to. At this point, I understand this is an old question by Sylvester, who asked in 1864 in the Educational Times what the probability. Actually, he asked the following question: drop 4 points randomly, independently on the indefinite plane. What is the probability that one of them is contained in the convex hull of the other, so this is the complementary probability. Said that it is going to be 4, which was proved by him, and so this was in the Educational Times, and the letters came in with the answer. He proved 1 over 4, and proved it is 1/3, half. Ingleby proved it's 3 over 8. An anonymous solver came in with the solution less than 1/2. And Woodhouse proved that it is 35 over 12. And we all know what the culprit is. The culprit is the indefinite plane. There is no proper probability measure. You have to define the probability measure on it. And actually what Wuthaus did was to compute it for the circle. This is the right value for the circle. And of course, Sylvester acted as any mathematician would have. He modified the question. He said, well, for what k is P4k minimal and maximal? What is the value of P4k? And he computed it for the triangle, which turned out to be 1/3. And it took 50 years when Baschke proved what you see over there. And what Baschke did, he used symmetrization and shaking down, which became a very common tool since. And then several smaller results along the way. Hostinsky understood what P5 of B3 was. B3 is the cube, the ball in three dimensions. That it's what is written there is wrong. This is Kingman's computed PD plus 2BD, the d-dimensional ball, and Miles computed PD plus 3. And they all tend to 1 as d goes to infinity. Prove that d plus m is also d plus m points. If you pick d plus m points from the d-dimensional ball, they all of them are in convex position with very high probability. And we proved it already, little surprisingly, almost exactly that if n is smaller than 2 to the d over, slightly smaller than 2 to the d half, then all of them are in convex position. And if it is larger, slightly than 2 to the d half, then there is a point in the convex hull of the others. And Walter proved a surprisingly precise result for the plane, namely that if you pick the points from the triangle, endpoints from the triangle, then the probability is this, what you see over there, 2 to the n times 3n minus 3 factorial, etc. So this is a surprisingly precise result. It had some predecessors, though. And Walter's result implies that the nth root of p and k times n squared is between positive constants. Well, it's very easy. A triangle is contained and contains it with same area, essentially same area. So this is, here is one of the main results I'm going to talk about. This is the value of the limit. This is the asymptote of this quantity p and k. So p and k behaves like that constant divided by n squared, and that constant is e squared over 4 times the defined quantity. If the area is not 1, then you have to divide by area of k, the cube over there. The proof shows almost immediately the following, that if conditional to the fact that your point is landed in convex position, the convex hull is very close to k-naught. So if xn, the random sample, landed in convex position, then the convex hull is very, very close to k-naught. This is the statement here. Some explanation may be in the fact that that k-naught is the convex subset of K which has the worst approximation properties, according to what I told you before. So if this is K and here is K naught inside, then this needs the most points to approximate it within epsilon, and then you have more space over here to place n points. More space over there to place random points than near any other convex curve. This is just a fairy tale. You can compute the size of the expected size of the random collection of polygons, and it turns out to be what you see over there for when, again, when the area is 1. And this is just comparison previous number, which was almost the same. The previous number is a little larger. Again, n squared and n to the 1/3, n to the 2/3 has been explained. Here is a must work in higher dimensions. I just told you that K-node has the worst approximation properties, and the same happens in higher dimensions. So in higher dimensions, the same thing has to happen. But it is not known whether K-node is unique in higher dimensions. In higher dimensions, it is known that the convex subset with maximal affine surface area exists. But its unicity is not known.
Do you know anything about the three parts of the boundary?
No, I don't. This would be affine differential geometry that you have to do.
What is K-note by
more than K-note? K-note is the convex subset of K with maximal affine perimeter, which happens to be unique in the plane. But in higher dimension, there exists such an object for every convex set K, but its unicity is not known. The free parts, I don't know. Someone told me that it has to be rotation paraboloids and with some affinity, but I doubt it. It's not known what is this body for the cube in three dimensions. We know it exists because of upper semi-continuity, but unicity is not known. Existence is known, but unicity is not known. In the proof, unicity is not used. In the proof of the limiting, of the limit relation, that n squared times nth root of p, etc., unicity of k-naught is not used. So that could do it, but because the formula is missing. So there is a... I have time for that, but there... So
does any relation exist for n dimension, you may ask, an isomorphic form to floating body? Sounds pretty...
Floating body?
No,
from the floating body you can compute the affine perimeter. But it's not the floating body of K. It's the floating body of K naught. So you want to find the maximum affine perimeter convex subset, and not so that you have to find something whose floating body is small, right? So not K naught.
This is a typical body. In the plane, you said a typical limit body is this or this.
Yes, in the plane, I claim it is, yes.
In R3, you say?
There is a limiting body. I don't know if there is a limit shape.
Because there are many candidates?
Nobody knows. Probably there is a single candidate, but I don't know. There is no proof in sight. Nobody knows. Yet, here is a conjecture. That in D dimensions, the probability should behave this way. N to the 2 over D minus 1 times the same thing. Of which I can prove only this. For every K in D dimensional space of volume 1, the quantity nth root of P times N to that certain power is between constants. So the limit is unclear, but it is at least bounded. And this also, you can use this to the set of random convex polytopes defined by your random sample xn in d-dimensional case is of this size. So I define you... I don't need this blackboard and I'm something like that one. Does it?
Yeah.
Yeah? So... So Q of xn can be defined in any dimension, right? This is a random sample and all convex polytopes whose vertices come from xn. This is a random collection of polytopes. And the size is written over there. This can be computed in higher dimension for as well. It turns out that the same thing, this is in dimension D, P sub n k is the collection of convex lattice polytopes, where lattice is 1 over n times zd, and its size is written over there. It's the same thing again. Number of points in k is n to the d, so the same exponent is over there. I wanted to indicate the proof that of this theorem, of the previous theorem, but I think I won't. I wanted to show how the affine perimeter appears, the cubic root of the cube of the affine perimeter appears in the exponent, but I don't have enough time. Maybe one more remark that this is a... So in this collection, I consider each convex polygon or polytope with the same weight. So there is uniform measure over there. And you can do different measures well because of the high concentration, but every, say, everybody has to carry weight 1, and nobody should carry weight more than polynomial, say, in n number of points in here. So, for instance, if you give weight the area or the volume of the corresponding k, the same thing will happen. If you add as weight the square of the area, the same thing will happen. But if you add much more than that, exponential in n, then it won't. The open question is, of course, higher dimensions, and this is where I stop. Thank you.
Any questions? Did you try iteration? I mean, second step after you have put in K0. What is going?
It's going to be K0.
Okay.
Mapping K. K to K naught tells you that K naught is K naught.
But it's homotetically inside, how it goes?
It's the same thing.
There's no homotetic.
No homotetic. It's the same thing. So here is the square, and here is K naught inside. And if you cut anything off from it, it's going to be K naught. If you cut anything that is outside K naught, it's going to be the same. The maximum maximum affine perimeter goes with K naught in this set. So in this smaller set, the maximum affine perimeter goes with K naught. As long as you can shrink it up to K naught and it remains the same. You can cut off everything. So that is K naught is mapped to K naught. So this mapping is not quite understood. Not well understood.
In high dimensions, the same.
In high dimension, I don't know the existence of this map, because I don't know the unicity of K naught.
But if K naught exists, then it has the same property, right?
Yes.
What is the analog of the curvature integral provided?
Curvature in high dimension is the product curvature.
But it's what power?
Kappa to the 1 over d plus 1 is to be integrated on the boundary. This is the affine surface area. And here, I don't know, is there a constant over there? Yes? No? Opinions differ on that, but there may be a constant. Pardon me? Yeah.
Yes. Any other questions?